This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Dan Hurley. The inventor is haunted by an idea. The spirit of invention possesses him, seeking materialization. That's how Alexander Graham Bell described what it was like to have a personality driven to invent. Though best known for inventing the telephone, that was just one highlight in a long career of inventing that perfected everything from telegraphs to phonographs to hydrofoils. But don't get distracted by the gizmos. Bell's foundational passion was teaching the deaf. In an age obsessed with teaching every student the STEM disciplines, what can a child learn from a line from the life of a brilliantly successful inventor who admitted at one point he didn't really understand electricity? That's what my guest today, Mary K. Carson, set out to do in Alexander Graham Bell for Kids. To join our discussion, call 513-419-7100 or email talk@wvxu.org. And we're also on Facebook and Twitter. Mary Kay, this is wonderful to have you here.
Thank you.
Book is really fun as a historian and trying to get back in touch with my inner child or something. I really enjoyed reading the book. So you've had a whole string of these kinds of books, right?
It is. It's a series that takes historical figures and historical time periods and puts them into context for young readers and adds activities. So some kids learn by reading and some kids learn by doing, and it's always good to have something for everyone.
Yeah, I think actually everybody learns by doing, and then the reading can support that.
That's true.
One of the really fascinating things about Bell's life was the interplay of silence and sound. His concern and his active efforts to help those who were deaf throughout his life is really amazing. Why was that? What drew him into that world of the deaf?
And it's inseparable from his inventions as well. And his mother, his own mother, was profoundly hard of hearing. And so he grew up in a household with a woman who not only was his mother, but his teacher. They were homeschooled and learned to fingerspell with her and communicate with her. And the family was sort of a family of speech therapists. His father and his grandfather were involved in what we would today call speech therapy, but they were teachers of both children and adults who had stutters or speech impediments, as well as teaching people who couldn't hear to speak. And so dinner time conversation would, you know, evolve to let's all see how the mouth is shaped when you make an S as opposed to when you make a P. And so it was pretty much organic for him to understand how sound is produced by the human body, and that went on to be all-consuming in how to transmit that sound of the human voice through electricity in the telephone.
Well, and this with his father and grandfather developing what he called, what they called, visible speech and
right.
a visible alphabet
right.
based not on the letters but on the sounds
mm-hmm.
and then how to the mouth, the tongue, the roof of the mouth all work together to make each sound. So they're helping people who were deaf to actually learn to speak clearly.
Right. They wanted to be able to show for them to see visually how to hold their mouth and control their breath to make the sounds that they themselves couldn't hear. And they used to have sort of a fun dog and pony road show that they would take sounds from the audience. And while Alexander Graham Bell was backstage, his father would take sound recommendations from the audience in this alphabet of sounds, and then Alexander Graham Bell would be challenged to make those sounds. And sometimes they, were foreign phrases that he didn't know what they meant. And there's a famous story where one was actually the sound of a saw. And, you know, it was very entertaining. This is, you know, back in the day when people went out for an evening lecture instead of watching Netflix. So
there you go. We have a caller who's called in already. Wow. And Mike, I want to get you on. I think what you are calling about relates to this part of our discussion.
Yes. Yes. Dr. Bell was such an advocate for the cause of the deaf. Bell's visible speech is even referred to in My Fair Lady.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yes, Henry Higgins says, well, I've already taken her down in Bell's visible speech.
Oh.
That's interesting.
I don't know if that comes from the original Pygmalion play, probably.
No, I didn't know that.
But I've also visited his homestead up in Brantford, Ontario.
Oh, you have. I'm so jealous.
And, of course, the fact that he's so much different than so many inventors because he's so consumed with his inventing that he neglected his family like others have done. And just the fact that he should be noted for having introduced Annie Sullivan to Helen Keller.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Just a tremendous man. I mean, a tremendous man, not just a tremendous inventor.
Yeah, a tremendous humanitarian.
Yeah, and that extends to a lot of different areas that Mary Kay gets into. I mean, buying Science Magazine.
Yes, and
starting National Geographic. I mean, these have great impact on people.
Yes, yes. And so many of his inventions were, you know, he started to work on them because of his own tragic personal experiences with a child. He had two small boys who died, you know, within days of being born and had trouble breathing, and that inspired him to invent the first sort of crude artificial respirator, which was like a vacuum jacket. It's sort of, if your listeners know what an iron lung is, that basically surrounds the body and changes the air pressure to force air in and out of your lungs. So it was a progenitor of that. And all of his work with the deaf was based on from his mother, and then he went on to marry a woman who was also completely deaf, and she was actually his student at one time. And he considered his work helping the deaf learn to speak and be integrated into society as his life's work, much more than the telephone for which he's famous.
And Helen Keller dedicates her autobiography to him.
And they were huge. I mean, she was a child, an 8-year-old child when she first met him. So before he didn't hire Annie Sullivan, but he put the parents in contact with the Perkins School, which is how she became acquainted with Annie Sullivan. But he stayed in contact with Helen Keller her whole life, and she visited him up at his homestead up in Nova Scotia, and they were great friends their whole life.
I think we should point out that he was born in Scotland, lives in Scotland and England, comes to Canada because of tuberculosis, and he's trying to get into a better climate.
Lost both of his brothers to tuberculosis.
And then moves to the United States. Mm-hmm. How would you describe, and Mike sort of raised this, mm-hmm. how would you describe the personality of Alexander Graham Bell in his mid to late 20s, sort of on the eve of the breakthrough with the telephone? What is it that – how would you describe this human being?
You know, he was driven, obviously, and intelligent, but he was also a bit melancholic, I would say. He was desperately in love with his student and wanted to invent the telephone and prove himself and be able to marry her. And he had self-doubt. Right? He worried that he didn't have the technical expertise. That's why he went and found Thomas Watson to help him, because he wasn't good at building contraptions with his hands. And he knew he needed more information about electricity. And so as opposed to Edison and some of these other people of that era that seemed – a sort of superhuman. He wasn't superhuman, and I actually really liked him. And sometimes you spend a lot of time with someone when you're writing about him or her, and you come away sort of thinking, well, they're interesting, and they did marvelous things, but you wouldn't want to, you know, share an apartment with them, or you wouldn't want to go to dinner with them. But I would love to have gone to dinner with Alexander Graham Bell.
You know, another thing that when he comes to North America, spends a year in Canada getting better, then moves to Boston. Your description of Boston, I think this is 1871 when he moves to Boston. And I'm just going to read a short thing. Boston was full of university students, scientists, and inventors. It was also home to rich businessmen in search of opportunities to make money. Sounds just like the kind of entrepreneurial startup culture that Boston still is and that Cincinnati wants to be. And it just – that those two sentences just leapt off the page to
Interesting. Interesting.
You know, it's now – the beltway around Boston where all that's happening.
Right.
But venture capitalists, all those college students, all that experimentation.
Yeah. Well, and you have to remember this is the era of people had lots – those that had money had lots and lots of money and were looking for places to invest. And, you know, the Rockefellers and all the media magnates and the oil barons, they were looking for investments – for their money.
And to make more money.
Yes, absolutely.
It's very straightforward. So do you think Alexander Graham Bell would be fascinated by smartphones?
Absolutely. I absolutely think he would be. I do.
You know, one of the things about invention I think really comes through in your book is that for Bell, what he's doing is he's constantly building on whatever was out there.
Mm-hmm.
He was not creating from scratch, as I think sometimes people think about inventions. He was taking what existed and said, how can it work better? And I think there's a ton of examples of that in his work.
Yes. And all of these things were going to be invented, right? It's not like we wouldn't have had a telephone if Alexander Graham Bell hadn't been born. Other people were working towards it. It was
a
race.
In fact, within days,
yes.
They were
– right?
He got the patent first.
Yes. These things were going to happen. So one of my favorite Alexander Graham Bell quotes, and I'll read it just so I don't get it wrong, is that the inventor is a man who looks around upon the world and is not contented with things as they are. He wants to improve whatever he sees. He wants to benefit the world. And I think if Alexander Graham Bell were alive today, what would he be working on? And, you know, just as you said, maybe he'd be working on apps.
and here he is. When the breakthrough comes with the telephone, he's only, what, 27?
Yes.
So, and I think
and
that,
wealthy, you know. Wealthy, wealthy, wealthy.
He so, becomes very wealthy.
Yes. So he never has to, you know, worry about making money again.
But on the other hand, he really had no real interest to run the company
that grew out of the
telephone, you know, the Bell Telephone Company. That wasn't what he was – he wasn't going to spend his time doing that. So he was interested. With the telephone, can you sort of summarize for – in a radio situation where you don't have all the drawings and the book and everything, but you're used to working for – with kids, so maybe you can make this work. What is it that was essential? What was the essential insight that he had about how to move from the telegraph to the telephone?
Right. I think – and it's about sound, right? If you think about a telegraph, you know, is dots and dashes, and so it's all about stopping and starting the electric current, right? Full stop. Stop, stop, stop. And of course, that's not going to work with the human voice. And he realized that the sound of the human voice is an undulating wave. So if you think about, you know, now we see spectrograms as part of our culture. So you can imagine it visually that someone speaking is a wave of ups and downs. And so he knew that somehow the electric current couldn't be stopped and started. Somehow it had to be varied. And that was his big breakthrough. And so to use the variation of electrical resistance to mimic that same wave and transmit the human speech.
And it was in that context that he visited this long-established, famous scientist, Joseph Henry, at the who was at the Smithsonian. And he tells Henry that, yeah, he understands that, but he doesn't really know enough about electricity to figure out how to make that practical. What's Joseph Henry's response?
He says, figure it out. You know, get that knowledge. You know, go back and figure – you know, he – you can't – especially then, it's like – it was so competitive that you couldn't go to another inventor and ask them. He needed to figure it out for himself, or somebody else was going to beat him to it.
So that sort of just determination seemed to me to be a turning point for Alexander Graham Bell in his life. It was like, here's what you need to do. You know what you want.
Yes.
Just do it. Get it. Figure it out. And for all those people who don't maybe have a mastery of electricity math,
coding,
or whatever it was. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Just figure it out.
Yeah.
Now, okay, the telephone's the big thing that he's remembered for. What are some of the other inventions that he was involved with that you think, you know, you found fascinating as you dug into this?
You know, flat records. You know, we sort of think of Edison and his phonograph and the old cylinders. I mean, it was Alexander Graham Bell and his team that actually invented the first flat wax records. And at the Smithsonian, they actually even have one still where you can hear Alexander Graham Bell's voice if you go on their website. So the records were a big one. I don't think
– and this is a situation where he and Edison are working in the same field. But not together.
No, no. And Edison had to, Edison had a phonograph that used 10 cylinders that wasn't very successful. And he ended up having to pay Alexander Graham Bell for the patents to be able to use the technology that he used to actually make the Edison phonograph successful. So that was very edifying to Alexander Graham Bell,
yeah,
I think.
And humiliating to Edison. So, okay. So phonographs, the flat phonograph.
Phonographs. You know, he invented the audiometer, to measure people's hearing, right? We talk about, everyone knows about decibels, right? A decibel was named for Bell. It's decibel. And so that is actually, that unit of loudness is actually named for Alexander Graham Bell. And he invented a crude audiometer, but one of the first ones. And he also invented the metal detector. I'm sure as a historian, you know about President Garfield being shot and them, the poor man living, I think, 80-some days, raging with infection with a bullet lodged in his body. And they called on Alexander Graham Bell to come and find it. And he had a telephone. It was based on the telephone receiver that could detect metal. It wasn't successful.
Nope.
but it did go on to work for soldiers in World War I. So that's another thing that he invented.
We should point out that the fact that that failed wasn't the reason Garfield died.
No.
He died because doctors who didn't understand that bacteria and viruses were carried on their dirty hands had stuck their fingers in the hole.
Well, and you would also blame the person that shot him, I would think. But
well, okay.
But also, they're not sure, but they think maybe the bed had metal springs in it and no one knew about them, so that had some interference. He also worked, was really big into aviation and helped everything that he invented wasn't, instead of aeroplanes, it was aerodrome. And when he worked on the hydrofoil, it was hydrodrome dome. So he wanted the Latin of the runner, the water runner and the air runner. So those are some other things
and
that he invented.
And he's working sort of parallel with the Wright brothers?
Yes, competitors. Okay. If you remember, for the Wright brothers fans out there, Orville Wright was in a horrible crash when he was doing Signal Corps trials, and Lieutenant Selfridge was one of his passengers, and he was part of the group with Bell that was working, and he actually died in that crash. It became the first aviation fatality. So they were definitely competitors. And, you know, Samuel Langley is the man that the Smithsonian gave credit to inventing the airplane for many years, up until, you know, after Wilbur Wright had passed away. So Alexander Graham Bell had worked with Langley as
well. The
world
is very different inside the loop there in Washington, D.C.
Yes. So it seems like Alexander Graham Bell just keeps showing up in history in all these places when all these events are going on. It's almost sort of a Forrest Gump kind of thing.
Yeah. When you write a book like this, who do you have in mind as your audience?
I actually have a couple people in mind. I have in mind a 9-year-old who likes to do things with his or her hands, likes to build things, likes to make things, likes to experiment.
Consequently, all of the suggestions.
All the activities. I have in my mind an 11 or 12-year-old who really likes to read about history. And I also have in my mind an elementary school teacher who wants help bringing STEM topics and historical topics to her students.
So in your mind, what makes a children's book on a historical figure in this particular case? I guess we could also say on science.
Mm-hmm.
What makes that a good book? What sets it apart from maybe other things that are out there in the market?
I think it tells a story. I think we're all, as human beings, drawn in by narrative. And there are tons of great stories in this book. When I talk to kids at school, we always talk about stories and the stories of people's lives. And kids are always drawn in by story. And for me, that, you know, even though I write nonfiction, I still see myself as a storyteller. And I think that's really important.
Well, history. Story is basic.
That's right.
So telling the story is what sets you apart?
You know, I think so. And that also, at least for myself personally, it's really important for me to show a progression. So like how like you said, Alexander Graham Bell wasn't working in a vacuum, right? He built upon the work of others. And that others went on and took his work and have done their own things with it.
And also, late in his life, he gave a presentation someplace that you cite that he really recognized that everything he had done, starting with Watson and the telephone, had all been parts of teams.
Mm-hmm.
That he wasn't the lonely inventor. He was the person who gathered the right group of people together,
right,
and worked with them successfully.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, that is true, and especially for that time when people were so competitive, that was unusual because people were worried about being, you know, somebody else getting to it first.
Yep, I think that's still out there.
Yes, I think so.
So, Mary Kay Carson, I want to congratulate you on your book
on
Alexander Graham Bell, and thank you for being with us today, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to this podcast of Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. The producer for today's show is Pete Reitmeier. The assistant producer is Selena Reeder. The technical director is Josh Elstro. Archives of our programs are available on the website, wvxu.org. I'm Dan Hurley.